listening to Central Time. I'm Dean Kinetter, in today for Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll talk with the author of a book about healing from illness and injury and the lost art of rest and recovery. Right now, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Sarah Hopeful with a story about hunting, just as many Wisconsinites spent their weekend in the woods.
Deer hunters across the state are gearing up for another gun season opener with hopes of getting that big buck. For writer Ron Weber, it's not about the catch, but the opportunity the day provides.
Opening day 2022, deep in the heart of the Shawamigan-Nicolet National Forest near Clam Lake in Bayfield County. Scattered gunshots greet the daylight, heightening the excitement unique to opening morning. Only time would tell what waited for me down the trail. As the shots become more infrequent and the morning wears on, a hint of doubt enters my mind as I think to myself, maybe I should have sat somewhere else. Suddenly at about 10 a.m., a deer materializes, seemingly out of nowhere. The doe is moving quickly, but why? There are no other hunters nearby, so maybe it is an over-anxious buck that has her in such a hurry. As I wait for the answer, in my mind's eye, a big rack buck steps out of the spruce swamp. That vision keeps me company for the next hour. The afternoon is uneventful, save for two separate periods of 20 minutes or so of absolute silence. It is rare that nature and man conspire to make such an offer. No gunshots, car horns, blue jays, ravens, squirrels, or other usual denizens of the woods. Even the wind falls still. I strain my ears trying to hear something, but there is only deafening silence. As the curtain falls on another opening day, I climb out of my stand with nothing to show for 10.5 hours of sitting, but an empty lunch bag, two great silences, a doe sighted, and the vision of a trophy buck stepping out of the spruce. Like all the opening days before, it had been a memorable day. Did I say nothing to show for my time in the woods? What more could I have asked for? Did I get my deer? Does it really matter? I'll paraphrase the great Wisconsin conservationist Alda Leopold to answer that question. What was big was not the rack, but the chance. What was full was not my tag, but my memory. That comes from Leopold's The Sand County Almanac, a book every hunter, no check that, every person should read. It can change one's view of the natural world and their place in it. No, I didn't get my deer, but there is always the next day, the next year. The 12 months between opening days is a necessary interlude to heighten the anticipation for the coming of that one special day each year. It has the power to remind even us adults of the magical feeling of a child awaiting a visit from Santa on Christmas Eve. As the days shorten and the sun's warmth begins to wane, all of nature takes note. Animals are busily packing on weight or stocking their shelves in anticipation of the coming winter. Plants similarly go dormant or die. The green of spring and summer steadily receding, culminating in one final and glorious burst of color before the more steely, stark landscape of November takes hold. Hunters take notice too, as that special day looms just weeks away. Just when the anticipation becomes almost unbearable, it finally arrives. Come opening day, I will be just where I've always been since I was 13, in the big woods of southern Bayfield County, waiting to write the next chapter in the story. Too excited to sleep very well, I will arise early and get myself ready. Walking in the pre-dawn darkness, vision of what awaits for me will flash through my mind. Settled in with my back against a tree, I will wait patiently and thankfully for whatever gifts the hand of fate offers. If it can't be the buck that lives in the shadowy spruce of my mind, then this once-upon-a-time kid will gladly welcome a visit from Santa instead.
Ron Weber is a writer who lives in Weyerhaeuser. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Sarah Hopeful.
Now, when we get injured or ill, we're often counting down the days until we can get back to our normal routine. Whether that pressure comes from limited sick days, deadlines, or just stubborn self-reliance, we rarely take the full amount of time needed to completely heal. Our next guest is here to teach us some about the healing process and how we can make the most out of our time spent recovering. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Have you or a loved one gone through the process of recovering from an illness, an injury, a traumatic event? What was it like? Did you feel like you had to go back to work before you should have? What's been helpful in your recovery? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Gavin Francis is a primary care physician and author of the new book, Recovery, The Lost Art of Convalescence. Gavin, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me along, Dean.
Well, the title of your book refers to recovery as a lost art. And as I started reading, I realized that we really have lost something in terms of the way that recovery is thought about as part of the medical process. Can you talk about how it was treated and talked about differently in the past?
Yes, of course. So my own medical training didn't really mention recovery or convalescence. You couldn't see them in the index of the textbooks that I had to study at medical school. But I think that's because in the last 50 years or so, the 20th century, we had so many fantastic medical interventions, wonderful drugs and surgical innovations, that we began to think that all you need is the right kind of technology or the right kind of drug. But, you know, there's much older traditions of recovery. We used to be much better at taking the time to recover that you really needed. And we used to have a culture that really valued and gave respect to that process. And maybe that was because we didn't have all the fancy drugs. We didn't have all the technology. And so we had to rely on more traditional methods. And I think my own experience has shown that with modern medicine, it's wonderful. You know, I wouldn't want to be without it. But we really have lost something in terms of that respect we used to give to the process.
And what were you seeing in your experience as a doctor or just as a person that made you realize, hey, something's missing here. We need to focus a little more on the recovery side of things.
Yeah, often as a physician, I'll see a patient with, you know, just take, for example, a pneumonia, like a significant chest infection, something that could really lay somebody low for a while. And I'll prescribe them some antibiotics after examining them. And then sometimes a week later, I'll get a phone call and the patient will say, hey, doc, I've finished those antibiotics, but I'm not completely better. And I would say, well, I wouldn't expect you to be completely better yet. You know, it takes a while. Your body's got to recover. You might have killed off the infection, but your body's been weakened and it's going to take some time. And similarly, you know, people who, for example, might go for orthopedic surgery, you know, they fall, they break a bone, they're taken into hospital, they get the bone screwed back together or metal plates put in, and then they get very frustrated when they can't immediately go back to normal. And I have to say, well, that's the bone put back together, but actually the process is going to take a while. It's going to be weeks, sometimes months. And if you engage with that process and you give that process respect, then you recover much, much better rather than just feeling impatient about it.
Yeah, in your book, you write that, I'm quoting here, illness is not simply a matter of biology, but one of psychology and sociology. Could you talk a bit more about how those elements factor into a recovery?
Yeah, of course. I mean, a huge part of how we recover is what our expectations are. So what we expect to happen often becomes kind of self-fulfilling. So a huge part for me of being a good doctor is trying to figure out what my patient most has faith in and what they expect to happen and trying to either gently modify that belief or take advantage of it. You know, a really good example of that, just the power of our expectations, is the placebo effect. You know, with so many drugs have been tested against placebos, which are essentially blank pills. But we know that if you have a blue placebo, that's more likely to make you feel sleepy or tired. If you have a red placebo, that's more likely to work well as a painkiller. We know that capsule placebos work better than tablets. So people have beliefs about things that they take, things that they're prescribed, and they can have really profound effects on the way that they feel. I wonder if there's an attitude thing here too, because I'm thinking of one story I tell in the book about two patients of mine, two men who both suffered from heart attacks. Both of them collapsed. Both of them were resuscitated and brought back to life and then had defibrillators put in their chest, implantable defibrillators that you carry and wear. But it was really amazing to me how one of these men experienced that really terrifying ordeal as a kind of rebirth. You know, he felt that he'd cheated death and he'd been given extra years, and he went on to have these glorious few years, really enjoying and savoring every moment of his life. Whereas the other man found the whole experience terrifying, felt very fragile, felt very vulnerable, felt very frightened of what might happen to him. And his life was diminished as a result. And that's a really good example, I think, of how the same event can have massively different meanings and different consequences depending on our state of mind, on our attitudes.
We're talking with Dr. Gavin Francis right now, physician and author of the book Recovery, The Lost Art of Convalescence. We're talking about the healing process, how we could do it better, how we could give ourselves more time to properly recover from illness or injury. We want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. Have you had to go through a long recovery from an illness or an injury? Do you have a chronic condition that requires a lot of rest and healing time? How are you able to fit that into your life? What difficulties do you face? Let us know at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Dean Kinetter. We're continuing our talk with Dr. Gavin Francis, physician and author of the book Recovery, The Lost Art of Convalescence. We're talking about the process of healing and how to make the most of it. You can join in at 800-642-123 with your experiences, your questions about recovery and healing. That's 800-642-1234. And Gavin, one thing I think of when I hear long recovery lately is long COVID, which is something that's kind of tough to pin down, but has very real symptoms and consequences. Has seeing patients with some form of long COVID impacted, you know, your thoughts on this topic of recovery?
Yeah, of course, Dean. I mean, as a general physician, I see patients with all kinds of long-term conditions. And, you know, when we say long COVID, we have to know what it is exactly that we're talking about. You know, for some people, the consequences of COVID is that they remain very breathless for a long time. It seems that they can't catch their breath. For other people, it's just their smell that never came back. Other people become very, very fatigued, exhausted, with very kind of minimal effort. And so there's lots of different consequences of this illness. But as a primary care doctor, I've known people for a long time who have post-viral fatigue. You know, we know a little bit about the history of medicine. We can go back even a couple of thousand years. There's accounts of people with high fever, illness, breathlessness, who then become very fatigued. So this is a very ancient condition too, although it's still not one that's particularly well understood. But when I sit down with a patient who's suffering with really difficult fatigue after their COVID, what I can talk to them about is different kinds of techniques that have helped other patients of mine in the past, different kinds of physical therapy kind of approaches. And we can also rule out other kinds of conditions that cause exhaustion. You know, we can rule out thyroid problems. We can rule out anemia and low iron. We can rule out lots of other things. And so even though long COVID itself is very poorly understood, there's still quite a lot that can be done to make people feel better.
As you point out in your book, sometimes taking all the time we might need isn't always practical, especially if you have a job that's wanting you back. You might miss out on income. And here in America, we are much less likely to take sick time than in some other countries. What do you see as, I guess, some of the obstacles right now for everyone being able to truly take those recovery periods that they need?
Yeah, it's difficult. There's a lot of economic factors, of course, and not everyone is in the same position of being able to take the work they need, the time they need off work. I mean, perhaps, for example, you have an arrangement or a job which doesn't let you take any sick leave, or it lets you take it but cuts your pay. It's been shown that the average European country, people take about double the amount of sick leave than people take in the United States. And I'm sure that's not because the people in Europe are necessarily more lazy or that they take longer to recover. I'm sure that it's to do with the availability of paid leave. So I always try and encourage people where they can to try and be kind to themselves. If they feel they need to take that extra time, then they should explore every possible way they can to be able to take that. Because my own experience suggests that if you do take the time to really recover properly, then you recover much better and you're less likely to relapse. But it's a very tricky problem, as you say, and I really feel for a lot of people who are in an economic position where they can't take that time.
Mm-hmm. And recovery is going to look a lot different whether, you know, you have a broken leg or a viral illness or perhaps a mental health crisis. Is there a common thread for people to kind of know when they're ready, when they feel healed and recovered?
Well, do you know, there is the World Health Organization many decades ago put out a definition of health that was really quite extreme. It said that health was the complete absence of any kind of social, physical or mental problem. It said it was complete social, mental and physical well-being. And my own view is that's incredibly rare. You know, if that's our definition of health, then almost nobody is healthy. And so I think it's much more helpful to think of health as a balance between different kinds of extremes, and that it means different things for different people, and it means different things for the same person at different stages of life. Do you know, what health means to an 18-year-old is very different to what health means to an 80-year-old. So I try to help patients find out what the best balance of health is for them. It might not be perfect, but we try and see what is possible. And sometimes it's better to think about what is possibly the best situation to get into rather than what is the perfect situation to get into. And as you say, Dean, that's very different with mental health problems versus different kinds of physical problems.
And something we hear a lot about is chronic pain and chronic illness. And I imagine that mindset of finding the best possible solution might fit with people that have recurring illnesses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Because medicine, modern medicine, is wonderful at quietening down different kinds of illness. It's wonderful at palliating and softening and mitigating and making things easier. But actually, if you look at the list of illnesses that humans can suffer and you look at how many of those we can definitively cure, it's not actually that long a list. Medicine is very good at helping with symptoms, but there's a lot of things we can't cure. But I would encourage people who are struggling with chronic pain or chronic illness still not to lose heart or to lose hope, because there's often still many things that can be done. And I often try and imagine my job as a way of helping people ease their suffering, but also helping people to live with a bit more autonomy, a bit more dignity than they might otherwise be doing. So even if we can't cure an illness, we can still help people to live more fulfilled lives or easier lives.
Let's go to the phones right now. We have John with us in Appleton. Hi, John.
Yes, hi. 7 weeks ago, I had a full knee replacement, and on my 2-week follow-up, they were amazed how well I was doing. I had nearly normal flexibility. And I'd have to say the reason for that was I was 95% either in bed or in my recliner, just taking it easy. And now I'm able to walk with pretty much normal. It's just a matter of steps. I need to get my muscle strength back, and steps are still you know, a little gimpy, but other than that, yeah, people are amazed how well I am doing.
John, love to hear it. Thanks for letting us know about that. And Dr. Francis, it sounds like John is getting the proper rest.
Yeah, absolutely. And a knee, recovering from knee surgery is a really good example of a kind of recovery that you can see how things are progressing. You just glance down at your leg, you can slowly see the muscle come back. You can see the tone, you can feel your balance coming back. It's a kind of recovery which is different in a way from recovering from something like what we were talking about earlier, long COVID, where it can be much more difficult to feel the edges of what constitutes recovery. It can feel much more difficult to be sure that we're really fully recovered. But no, I congratulate him. That's brilliant. Well done, John.
Yeah, John, thanks for the call. And Dr. Francis, that's all the time we have for today, but thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me along, Dean. All the best.
You too. Dr. Gavin Francis is a primary care physician and author of the book, Recovery, The Lost Art of Convalescence. He talked with us about how we get better at getting better and how to resist the pressure to rush our body's healing process. And you can still let us know about your experience with healing or recovery. Email ideas@wpr.org. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, State Senator LaTanya Johnson wants to re-examine the process of how we issue Amber Alerts for missing children. We'll talk with her about what she wants to change and why. And Donald Trump is unlike any other candidate in the presidential race. We'll talk with a longtime political journalist about how she thinks the media could do better at covering the former president and what the media's role is in a presidential election. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Coming up after the news, we'll talk to business development leaders from Wausau and Janesville about how communities across the state are filling out their retail storefronts in a tricky commercial real estate market. I'm Dean Kinetter, in for Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. It's Central Time. I'm Dean Kinetter, in today for Rob Ferret. You're with us on the Ideas Network. In the last few weeks, we've had conversations with city leaders and urban planning experts about the challenges that come with the housing market and the ripple effects that can have on a community. Today, we're turning our attention to commercial real estate, where some of the same factors are at play. A lot of retail stores closed in the past few years, but data show that the U.S. is on track to add more retail tenants than it's losing this year. Some of those storefronts that retailers had vacated have since been filled by non-traditional tenants like storage units and fitness centers. And the high costs of materials and borrowing is limiting the construction of new commercial properties. It's all changing the way some communities and businesses approach their economic development. We want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. What kinds of new stores and businesses have you seen come into your area? Does your city have a lot of vacant storefronts? How do you want to see your community grow? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Elizabeth Brodick is the development director for the city of Wausau. She previously worked for the city of Eau Claire and led multiple business improvement districts in Milwaukee. Liz, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Also with us is Gail Price, Vice President of Business Banking for Blackhawk Bank. He was previously the Economic Development Director for the City of Janesville. Gail, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Dean. Happy to be here.
Well, Liz, I mentioned some of the trends we're seeing in the commercial real estate market right now. I'm curious what it all looks like from where you're sitting in Wausau. What are you seeing in terms of commercial vacancies and new tenants?
So we are having, we definitely have some vacant office space, more than we did pre-pandemic. Hybrid work has been very much a trend that we're seeing. Luckily, our downtown storefronts are doing quite well overall. We have seen a few vacancies, but nothing to be very concerned about. We do have the benefit geographically of being the downtown hub in our seven municipality metro area. So that's been a benefit to us for sure. Some of the non-traditional storefronts that we've had for actually quite a while include a lot of photography businesses and a couple service businesses. So we are seeing a little bit more of that compared to retail. But really, the thing that we are keeping the sharpest eye on right now is our office vacancy.
And Gail, same question for you. What are you seeing in your area in southern Wisconsin?
So interestingly enough, we've had a weakness on the office side. We don't have quite the corporate offices that maybe you see in Wausau. But, you know, so there's been a less of an impact of the hybrid work environment. But we've been fortunate enough to have not, as a community, opened up much land for retail. So when there's been opportunities for backfill, it's been more on the traditional side. So earlier this year, Hy-Vee opened up a rehabilitated large-scale, Shopko, and that's been a successful reuse. We have had some smaller buildings that fit the mold to be able to do the climate-controlled indoor storage. So that's been a positive because there hasn't been anything like that in the community. But we're still seeing a lot of interest in the smaller scale, 3,000 square foot user, small strip center kind of projects. We just had a recent transaction on a vacant parcel in our regional shopping area that they intend to roll those over for other smaller scale retail developments. In the downtown, we've had a really good successful run after some significant reinvestment in the downtown to the tune of about $30 million. So that's been a positive to help promote backfill of retail spaces within our downtown that in a lot of cases are challenging because what's the right use for the downtown and for that walking environment? Is there enough entrepreneurs in the community to step forward and say, hey, yeah, we've got a business idea that we want to fill this space with?
And Liz, when it comes to those business ideas and those new entrepreneurs that Gail mentioned, do you get a sense in Wausau that there's some hunger to fill those vacancies when they arrive or to fill hypothetical new construction for retail?
Absolutely. We also have the benefit of a business incubator in our community. So that's been wonderful. They just started up their boot camp program again. So it's a 12-week entrepreneurial program that takes people who are interested in opening a business through the basics of how to do that and what they can expect kind of going forward, whether they operate out of their home, out of a different type of facility, or out of a storefront. So that's been wonderful to kind of feed the ecosystem. And we do have definitely people who are, generally entrepreneurs, having been the downtown director for Wausau, we do get a lot of entrepreneurs in this community who are interested in opening brick and mortar. So it has been an absolutely wonderful feeding system. I can actually look out my office window right now and kind of see some of the people who have come through that entrepreneurial boot camp and been able to be successful in those storefront relocations. So it's definitely been a plus for us.
And Gail, interest rates, mortgage rates, they're on the high end right now. And I understand that commercial rental prices have also gone up for space around the country. I'm thinking that might not affect, you know, your Dollar Generals or your Starbucks that want to move into a community. They can weather that. But for a smaller business owner or someone who wants to start a business, those might be barriers to enter the brick and mortar physical space. Are you seeing that play out from your angle?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. When you think about an entrepreneur who maybe is in that incubator space in Wausau or maybe in a rental space in downtown Janesville, and they want to make that next step into the owner occupancy, control their destiny, their possible growth, et cetera. You know, it wasn't just a year and a half ago, interest rates on commercial loans were, you know, 3.5% to generally under 4%, and you're going to be 8.25%, 8.5% now. That's a significant shift in where they have to, you know, spend their monies, spend their revenues. And what does that look like when they look at the bottom line of their business growth? And that has to get passed on in one way or another if they're going to make that next step. And, you know, unfortunately, that's turning into a barrier. Now, there's certainly some programs out there like SBA 504, where you can leverage some federal government investment that and reduce the down payment. But the challenge there is that the interest rates on those situations continue to rise up, where we might have had a conversation about a 504 in, say, March, and the rates today, because of the way treasuries are, they're 2% higher. So that's a risk, and that's a challenge right now in the marketplace and for all these communities that want to promote reinvestment.
We're talking with Gail Price right now, Vice President of Business Banking for Blackhawk Bank, and Liz Brodeck, Development Director for the City of Wausau, talking about the commercial real estate market and how to attract businesses to downtowns around Wisconsin. You can join in too at 800-642-1234. Liz, you've worked in Eau Claire before. You're in Wausau now. You've also worked in Milwaukee. And I'm curious, what is the biggest difference you've noticed in working in business development from a big city like Milwaukee to a mid-sized city like Wausau?
Oh, there are lots. it's really the biggest difference that I've seen is the goal of what the Business Improvement District exists to do. Generally in Milwaukee, it was, we focused so much on safe and clean streets and, making sure that storefronts were filled. It was kind of more basic on the, if you think about like a Maslow's hierarchy of, community development, it was more on the base level of like, we need to just make sure that this is a good, sustainable environment for businesses to operate within. In Wausau, the city does a lot more of that type of work in terms of ensuring trash is picked up, graffiti is removed, things like that. And also there's just a lot less of it in a smaller city. And then here, the bid really exists to help drive foot traffic to businesses. So it was always, you know, we'd always say like, our job is to get people downtown into the streets on the sidewalks, and then the business owners need to make sure that they are coming through those doors. So working with them on different promotional activities, events, things like that. So it was a little bit more on the social, like in Wausau, it's a little bit more on the social side of things, the cultural development. And in Milwaukee, we certainly did a lot of that because that's kind of where a lot of my passion lies, but it was a lot more on the very like basic kind of physical maintenance of the space. So a little bit different focus.
And Gail, when it comes to those larger retailers, those chain stores that might move into a suburban area, what draws them to like a mid-size or a smaller city in the state?
So much of the time it's being able to have a parcel or building available in the regional shopping area. So many of these larger retailers have metrics that are based on regional draw. They like to compete right across the street from one another because there is a large draw from outside the community. So they're hedging a bet that they're going to bring people from the surrounding communities into Janesville. And that's been a challenge in Janesville because we have the south side of the community that has no grocery store right now. The Pick and Save closed several years ago. And there's not been interest on a larger scale for a grocery to return to that area. So it does make it challenging because as an economic development professional, when we were trying to court a grocery into that area, usually they would point towards the regional shopping area as their desired location. So it does make it a bit of a challenge in smaller communities like this.
We're talking with Gail Price, Vice President of Banking for Business at Blackhawk Bank, and Wausau Development Director Liz Brodeck about the retail and commercial real estate market in Wisconsin and how it's shaping local downtowns. You can join in too at 800-642-1234. What kind of businesses do you want your city to attract? Do you like the direction your community is going in that area? How much vacancy do you see in your local downtown when it comes to storefronts and other property? And if you are in the business community yourself, we'd love to hear what you think. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Dean Kinetter. Right now, we're picking up the conversation on commercial real estate and what it means for economic development in Wisconsin communities. Our guests are City of Wausau Development Director Liz Brodick and former Janesville Economic Development Director Gail Price. You can join in the conversation, too, at 800-642-1234. How do you feel about the commercial development happening in your city? Do you like the businesses coming in? Would you like to see something different? Let us know at 800-642-1234. Now, Liz, I think if you ask most people, they'd want to see a healthy variety of businesses in their downtown. They wouldn't want to see, you know, a full row of gift shops that are similar or a full row of bars. Is there a way for development departments to encourage that variety, or is it just a matter of letting competition sort things out?
You are 100% right that mixed use is best downtown. And there, you know, that's a tough question because it's generally something that is a private, you know, two private parties making a transaction together. So unless there's a zoning compliance issue, there's not really a lot that that our local government steps in to assist with. It does help that, like, we are very involved. Both the mayor and I sit on the Wausau River District, which is our downtown organization board. And so we are, you know, privy to what storefronts are open and who's coming in where and things like that. But for instance, like, we have a new business that is hoping to come in downtown, filling up what is technically one storefront, kind of looks like two, but they need like a zoning change. So, you know, my assistant city planner came and kind of explained the situation, and we could have said something like, oh no, it's not really worth pursuing. But instead it was like, no, this is absolutely like a really, really cool idea. We need to go about whatever method we need to do to, you know, create a new zone, new zoning code or, new type of commercial code to allow this type of business in. So we have some influence in that way, but that's generally pretty much the extent of it. I mean, obviously, the extent of it technically, you know, on the personal side of things, of course, like we have another one of my employees is the liaison to our entrepreneurial and education center. So it's, you know, making those types of connections just among people and entities that know each other and work alongside of each other to say, oh, well, you know, we have this storefront and I know you guys are looking for something. So it's not really in the, like I said, the technical aspect of things, but it is very much in the, you know, social capital of exchanging information and knowing what is going to work well in a storefront versus what would be better, you know, in an upper story or outside of the downtown realm.
And Gail, we are seeing national data showing that commercial real estate construction is slowing down. How does that affect business development in your area?
Well, it definitely makes it more challenging to move forward. When you have interest rates that are higher, it really diminishes the amount of new investment, but those are also opportunities to help promote reuse of existing buildings, especially in the downtown. Now, hopefully the communities have some kind of assistance that is available through tax increment financing or some other rehabilitation fund to help promote that, because obviously one of the things that can be a hindrance is updating a building to current building codes when it was built, say, 125 years ago. So those are all kind of things that end up having to be a challenging balance to help promote that. But when we look at that whole picture, the financing piece tends to be a big gateway to preventing people making these investments and making those leaps.
And Liz, you mentioned earlier that office space has taken a bit of a hit in your area, that there's a bit of a loss of people due to the pandemic and working from home. How are you looking at those spaces from your angle?
It depends on the location. We have one, for instance, we actually have one office building downtown that is completely vacant. So there are the ownership group is pursuing a lot of different options. And then we have some just more underutilized office space. So those, you know, that's a matter of really recruiting office tenants who can use it and who would be well situated in a downtown area, or who could benefit from foot traffic, who could benefit from The proximity of to different uses and different types of storefronts, it makes it a more attractive office space overall to be located in downtown. So that's been helpful in terms of, you know, recruiting more service and business workers. For that completely vacant building, there has been talk of a lot of different things. And of course, you know, office to residential conversion has come up in conversations, and that is, you know, extremely difficult to do, not just for the reasons that Gail had mentioned earlier in terms of like the financing structures and things like that. But then you think about the codes that are required for office building versus residential use. And it's basically, it's kind of constructing twice, because you have to demolish part of the building to then upgrade to different standards that are needed for different code enforcements and things like that. And then you have to reconstruct, like put it, you know, put the building essentially back together. So that's been generally prohibitively expensive, not just here, but throughout the country. I know I've been keeping tabs on how many office conversions are happening and how many are happening successfully. And I just read of one that was a conversion that had already happened in Phoenix that now is being foreclosed on with a loan that has to, that I have to believe was it was a, similar to the cost of new construction, just because it's like I said, it is prohibitively expensive generally to make those things work, and especially then with affordable, any type of affordable rent or attainable rent. So depending on the, like I said, depending on the building, depending on the location, can be different remedies to kind of reoccupy that space.
And as we start to wrap up, Gail, I'm curious, what are you watching for next? What is the factor, the indicator that you're really tracking as it relates to business development?
That's a really good question.
it is
difficult. I think a lot of it has already started. You know, the cost of construction has slid back. You know, the pandemic was wreaking havoc on construction projects. You know, we've seen that stabilize right now. I think if the Fed steps forward with reduction of rates, that's going to help promote more development and reinvestment. But there's a number of factors that are, I think, going to have to come into play. There's no way that rents are going to catch up with the cost of capital right now. When we talk about the cost of residential occupancy, there's no way that it's going to catch up with that cost of funds. So my hope is that cost of funds comes down. We continue in Wisconsin to have this huge need for residential housing for workforce and to attract workforce. I hear this all the time from employers in the community. We need to see more residential development to help sustain business growth in our state.
And Liz, in our last minute, what is at the top of your agenda in Wausau?
More residential development is our department's number one priority. We just had a regional housing study done, and we are 525 units short for 2025 needs. So we are pursuing heavily residential development. For all the reasons Gail mentioned, it is very difficult to get the financing to make any sense right now and keep it within affordable rates. So those are the biggest things that I'm kind of keeping an eye on. You know, also our low unemployment rate and what that means for all of the wraparound services. We have a 2.3% unemployment rate in Wausau right now. So besides housing, which is a huge need for employers in our area, it's transportation and childcare is a very, very big one. So in terms of we're not doing even a lot of attracting businesses right now, because we still have one of the last counts I heard was 6,000 open jobs in Marathon County. So it doesn't really make sense to attract more jobs that would cannibalize our existing businesses. So we're really focused on finding the things that can free up the labor force, like I said, like housing and transportation and childcare, and then also home growing those businesses. So focusing a lot on homegrown, entrepreneurial, and innovative development.
Thanks to our guests, Elizabeth Brodeck, Development Director for the City of Wausau, and Gail Price, Vice President of Business Banking for Blackhawk Bank. They're with us to talk about the real estate market for retail businesses and how it affects communities around Wisconsin. I'm Dean Kinetter. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network.